I'm Kevin.
And I'm Stephanie.
And during our marriage, we have dealt with an electrocution, a brain tumor, brain surgery.
Then doctors telling us that children were not in our future, followed by miscarriage, and then Kevin's cancer diagnosis.
However, today, we live a life completely healed and restored with three healthy children who doctors said were not possible. And we're here to tell stories that inspire, give hope, and brighten your day. Welcome to
Tell Us a Good Story.
This episode is being presented to you by Storyside Church, where your story matters. At Storyside Church, they believe God always writes a good story.
You can join them for church online each Sunday morning on their Facebook page or watch their entire library of prior services on their YouTube channel, Storyside Church.
All right, Steph. You're already guessing fun facts here.
I am.
I'm like, please don't say anything. Please don't say anything.
I'm getting so anxious. I want fun facts like at the very beginning.
We'll see.
Okay.
We'll see. Well, friends, our next guest is the definition of a world traveler. She recently set the Guinness Book of World Records for the person who has traveled to the most countries in 1 year using a wheelchair. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to Tell Us a Good Story, Miss Renee Bruns.
Oh, Miss Renee, we're so excited to have you.
Thank you both. I am thrilled to be here. So excited to talk with you both. I know this is going to be a fantastic conversation.
And we have to feel sorry for Renee, because when she got on, she's like, yeah, I'm in Bali right now. I'm like, oh, poor thing. You're in Bali.
But I'm impressed she's not outside, though.
I would totally be outside, like flaunting the trees and the water and everything.
So I have to tell you, it's 8:30 p.m. where I am, so it's dark. And dark time in Bali, I don't know how to say this correctly, but there's a lot of bugs and a lot of creepy crawlies. I don't really like bugs. And when I'm talking bugs, I'm not talking, you know, those little spiders or flies. These are like massive bugs. So as soon as the sun goes down, I'm like, all right, I need to be back
inside. Time to go inside.
Oh my gosh. I would be packing bug spray everywhere I go, Steph.
Well, you know what? That brings up a crazy point, because every place you go has different insects or reptiles that you have to be concerned about. Has there ever been an opportunity or a situation where you're like, what the frick did I get myself into here?
Oh, for sure. For sure. I've had several hotel rooms where, and to your point about the bug spray, I bring the bug spray along, but I will wake up and see some sort of giant creature crawling around on the floor, and I'm, you know, barefoot in bed, like, all right, I'm going to get into my wheelchair, put my feet up in the air, try to kill this thing with this tiny little bottle of bug spray, which, you know, it's part of seeing the world, I suppose.
Girlfriend, I would be in your wheelchair, like trying to roll over it. Like wherever that bug went, I'd be rolling.
I have not tried that. Maybe I will have to give that a go.
Let us know how it goes.
You're going to need a little video camera in my room to watch that all unfold.
Squashing
awesome.
Them.
Yes. Okay. I want to know what brought this sabbatical of traveling around the world.
So it's a long story that I will abbreviate as much as I can, but I will tell you that it started before I even knew it was starting. So when I was 5, I went to New York City with my mom. It was the first time I had left. I grew up in a small town in Ohio. So it was the first time I had left Ohio on an airplane going to New York City. So like the vast difference of New York City compared to the farm that I was growing up on, I was just like awestruck. So in a weird way, it got me going to start traveling outside of, you know, where I was growing up at. And then we went from there, we started traveling the US. So that was the beginning part, you know, while I was still young, that we were traveling.
Just you and your mom?
My mom. So what happened after the New York trip, we came back and I said, I want to go see more of the world. I want to see all 50 states. That was my goal. You know, as a little girl in elementary school, I wanted to see all 50 states. So my mom, she wanted to do a family trip with us every year. So every summer we would load up in the car. We usually drove. Sometimes we would drive or fly, but we usually drove. We'd camp or tent wherever we were going to save money. There were 4 children, my mom, my dad. So there were 6 of us. We'd drive. And by the time I was 16, I had been to all 50 states.
Wow.
So what happened from there is I said, all right, well, I'm 16. I've now seen all of the United States, Alaska, Hawaii, everything, you know, included. So like, now what's next? I'm still so young. So I have the rest of the world. So I started traveling internationally in my early 20s. And then a year ago, I was super burnt out from the corporate world, from living through the pandemic, you know, all the things that everyone's reading in the news. My story was no different than that. And I said, I'm going to take a year and I'm going to redefine what I want my life to look like. I'm going to go out and travel. And I was going completely on my own. I have a long-term boyfriend. We've been together for 10 years. He said, I don't want to go right now. I'm in the heat of my career. I'm loving it. You go do this self-discovery trip, if you will, on your own. Come back and see what you want your life to look like. So I left and here I am.
Wow.
Okay, Renee, you said a small town, Ohio. My wife is dying over here. Please share with Steph. Where do you grow up?
Maria Stein, Ohio.
Shut up! Shut up!
I don't even want to know.
This is one of my fun facts, Steph. She graduated from Marion Local High School. So tell Renee.
MAC conference, girl. I was Parkway.
No way.
Oh my God. My dad was superintendent at Parkway, and then he became the high school principal after he retired at Coldwater.
Seriously, what a small world.
So when he said Bruns, I was like, Bruns? I know Bruns. I know that name.
Of course.
I'm so freaking excited right now. I can't believe this. Oh,
I have
Renee.
To tell you, when I was looking up both of you, so one of you went to Ohio Northern, which is where I got my undergraduate degree from, and the other one of you went to Capital University, which is where I got my MBA from. So this is like all coming full circle, this very intimate connection to such a small part of the world. I'm also blown away. How crazy.
That's amazing.
Between the two of you, you are destroying my list of fun facts here. So that was my second fun fact. You already took my other fun fact that she had visited all 50 states by the age of 16. The other fun fact was that she went to the Harvard of the Midwest.
Yes.
Like myself at Ohio Northern University. And then she got her MBA from Capital University, where you graduated from as well.
That's amazing.
So is it true you were the first student at Ohio Northern to be in a wheelchair and the buildings didn't have all the accessibility to ramps and all of that because you were the first student? Is that correct?
It is true. So a kind of fun story with that, but I enrolled, you know, signed up, got my scholarship, got, you know, my acceptance, all the financial stuff was set in place. And then we said, hey, can we come and, you know, let's look at the buildings, make sure they're going to work. Where am I going to sleep at? Where am I going to live at? And, you know, they didn't have dorm rooms designed for somebody with a wheelchair. So they came up with this very creative solution to give me and my roommate a triple room instead of a double room so that I would have the extra space, which I hate to admit this to the public, but it turned out to be quite a party room. And we had a lot of fun because there was so much room in there.
So there's so much room for activities.
Yes, exactly. Yes. So we had so much fun with it. And, you know, the school itself, of course, they didn't have the infrastructure. And, you know, it's a campus that's older and you don't want to destroy some of those buildings. But really kind of funny in the beginning how they kind of said, we're going to get creative with this. And it right. worked out to be a big party for me.
Okay, I have a question that's not making any sense to you. How tall are you?
I am 5 foot.
Ah, so were you born then having to need a wheelchair?
So my mom had not had any ultrasounds when I was born. She was like the epitome of health. She still is, you know, exercises the perfect amount, you know, didn't drink a coffee or an iced tea while she was pregnant. Like she did everything right. So I come out of the womb. This was the 80s. She has no pain control, no ultrasounds. She just
country girl. Yes,
exactly.
Strong woman.
Exactly. Her baby's supposed to be perfect because that's how they all come out. Yeah. So I come out and the doctors can see in my legs that there's some deformity. I had club feet is what they call it. Mm-hmm. And so they hand me over to her and, you know, they're trying to explain that there's something's not right. And, you know, they need to do some further evaluation. And she's just in utter denial. Like nothing is wrong with my baby. I love my baby. Like, please go away. Leave us alone. So, you know, eventually she kind of comes to terms with it, but I spent the first several years of my life in and out of doctors having surgery on my feet and my legs. So for all intents and purposes, I appeared to be a very normal child, other than the fact that I would often have casts or splints or, you know, some sort of leg brace on that would slow down the pace of a normal child would typically walk or crawl. I did walk for a few years. It was right before kindergarten. So, you know, two, three years before kindergarten. And then I started having a lot of pain and ended up moving to a wheelchair at that point. So there was a very short period of time where I was walking, but very, very quickly after that, I started using a wheelchair full time.
It's interesting because the reason I ask is, Embryo Stein, you have the look. You're pretty. You're blonde. The only thing was how tall you were in your wheelchair. Because, oh my gosh, Kevin, these girls are like 6 foot in high school.
Really?
Right? Oh, they're huge.
At Marian Local?
They are.
Yes. They're pretty, they're blonde, and they're 6 foot. All of them.
I was curious because that was a random question. Yeah, I didn't know if that I didn't know if that was a medical question or something else.
It was a Matt conference question.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Part of my diagnosis is that there is a short stature. I'm actually very tall for most other people that have my same diagnosis. And I attribute it to exactly what you were saying. Everyone else in my community, my genetic chains on both sides are all very, very tall. Mm-hmm. So interesting.
It is. Kevin, did you know the two things I love to do is eat and support small businesses?
That is correct.
And Snacks with a Twist checks both boxes.
From specialty pretzels to sweet treats like peanut butter bark and our kids' favorite Buckeye and Marshmallow Pops, this store is a one-stop shop for snacks, treats, and gifts.
You guys will not be disappointed with anything you purchase, and they will ship it to your doorstep. They are a proud sponsor of Tell Us a Good Story.
All right, Steph, I'm going to test you again here. What is your favorite book of all time?
Obviously, it's the Bible, Kevin.
Yes.
Nailed it.
Very good. This time you didn't say the book we wrote called You Met Her Where.
But it's still a really good book.
That is true.
And it would make a great gift for friends or relatives on their birthday or for Christmas.
Friends, you can order your copy of our book titled You Met Her Where at kevinandsteph.com. And we will make sure to personally sign a copy for you or whoever you want.
And as always, thank you for listening to Tell Us a Good Story.
So back up a second here. When you decided, hey, I want to take a sabbatical, I want to take a year off, you were an executive at a large company, I believe a Fortune 500 company. You had 250 people that reported up to you, and you decide, I want to take a sabbatical.
Mm-hmm.
First off, what was it like to walk in and resign and say, I'm leaving? And then the second thing is, what were some of the advice that people gave you? Did you get any weird advice when you told people what you were doing?
Okay, so I'll answer the first question first. I didn't take it lightly. It wasn't like I decided on Saturday that, oh, on Monday, I'm going to quit. You know, there were months of conversation and thought process going into this. And that's 250 people's lives that at the end of the day, I am impacting, you know, right, wrong, or whatever. Maybe it's for the better if I left, maybe for the worse, probably depends on the person. But knowing that there is that trickle effect was really, I took that to heart and I took it very seriously. So it was a difficult decision for me, but I also knew that I was at a point where if I continued to stay in that role, I wasn't going to be performing well for much longer. And that was also going to have that same type of effect on those 250 people. The conversation itself, when I put in my resignation, was obviously stressful. I had a boss who I had become friends with and, you know, really respected each other. There was very much a mutual respect, and I felt like I was breaking up with like a high school boyfriend or something. That, you know, it's like, I don't mean to do this, but I have to do this. And
it's not you, it's me.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It was a difficult decision for me. One, yeah. I don't regret, because like I said, at the end of the day, I needed it for myself, and that impacts everyone that I'm working with.
So what were some of the weird things that people may have said to you, whether it's family, friends, coworkers? Did you get any weird advice from people? Because resigning from this type of position is not common, right? That's not a normal situation. Mm-hmm. Plus to tell them, hey, I'm just traveling for a full year. So what were some of the things that people said to you?
Or thought that you were crazy to do it.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that there was a lot of that. I think a lot of people didn't understand the difference between a sabbatical and retiring and like wanting to reshape my future. And there was a lot of messaging, different leaders within the organization. Like, how do we say that she's retiring? Because she's in her 30s. She's not retiring. Surely she can't be retiring. And I wasn't. I had never, and I'm not planning on retiring. Then the sabbatical, that whole concept was such a foreign concept to the organization I was working for, and many organizations. You know, someone taking that much time off is just, who does that? Why would you do that? So there was a lot of speculation about what was really going on. And I think probably a lot of people thought, is she actually going out to travel, or does she have something else like that she doesn't want to tell us about? I think probably took a few weeks after I was gone, they realized, yeah, she's actually traveling. But to your point about the comments that people said, the number one thing that I heard people say, and it still sticks with me, is if I were 10 years younger, I would be doing the same thing. And I heard this from all age groups. And I kept thinking in my head, well, you're not too old. You're 40. All right. If you were 30, you'd do it, but you're 40. All right. You're 50. If you were 40, you'd go. Like, your chance is running out. Your time is ticking away. Don't sit there and tell me if I was 10 years younger, I would be doing the same thing. It was in my mind. That's how I interpret it. Their subtle way of supporting me.
Oh, that's good.
That is good. Okay. You're traveling to all of these countries. What supplies do you need? Because some places have different outlet sources. Some have different money, currency. So how
weather.
Do you... Yes.
Antarctica that you're
so
traveling to, right?
How do you prepare for all of this?
So when I left last May, I was coming to Bali. I'm back in Bali. This is where I'm ending my year of travel. But I didn't know where I was going after Bali. I literally had a one-way ticket. And to your point, how do you know what you're going to need? So I brought two t-shirts along, a pair of jeans, a pair of shorts, and pajamas. That's it.
No!
Traveling light.
Yes. But I would also say, so that doesn't feel like much. You, all of a sudden you add in, I need a computer. I need a computer charger. I need a phone. I need power adapters. As you said, different. And I have a very nice compact one, but it takes up space. I have things like antibiotics if I get food poisoning, which I have, and I've needed those, contacts and contact solution, and you know, just all the little, your day-to-day things, all your toiletries. Yeah. I didn't bring things like shampoo, and you know, I brought a little bit of toothpaste, but you know, people brush their teeth all over the world, so you can buy toothpaste everywhere. But there was a lot of thought into what do I need and what can I ditch? And the clothes got ditched out most.
So are you just buying clothes whenever you need them, like wear yours until they wear out and then just buy some more?
Well, hey, can I borrow that for 2 days while I'm here?
So I would do laundry, find a laundromat and wash, you know, once a week or, you know, every couple days. I did go back to my passport renewed. So by then, the three outfits or two outfits that I had were pretty worn out and faded and definitely needed. So I was able to refresh with a new set, but I haven't bought clothes when I'm out and about. I very much am like, this is what I have. I'm being budget conscious, and it's a slippery slope if you start buying things that you say, oh, well, now I need this. And then you're now spending money and you have to carry it with you.
Right.
Okay. When you go to certain places, like sometimes you have to concern about like the water and not being able to tolerate it. Is there other situations where you have to be concerned about different food or water or sanitation or anything like that?
The biggest thing is the water, the drinking water, but that also goes to like vegetables, like a fresh salad, because it's usually rinsed in the water. So I always do the research, depending on the country, you know, if you can drink the water or not. But in those countries where you can't drink the water, I'm also not eating raw vegetables, which I'll eat them if they're cooked, because if they're cooked, then the viruses and the bacteria die off. But you do have to be conscious of the food. The times that I've had food poisoning, I don't think it was because of the water. I think it was because of cleanliness in the kitchen. And so you have someone who goes to the bathroom, doesn't wash their hands, prepares your food, and a couple hours later, you're sick. I hate to like even share those stories because it's really gross, but it's, you know,
it
other
happens,
countries
I'm
just
sure.
don't have the, and I'm sure it happens in the US too.
So what are some of the best places that you've visited internationally, whether it's the beaches or Maldives or wherever? What's one of the nicest places you've been, Renee?
I love Southeast Asia.
Okay.
I love the people, the places I go. There's beauty in all of them, but I particularly love, in all the places I've been, the people and just sitting down and talking with the people, and not even, you know, a tour guide who's going to feed me, you know, their artificial story or what they're supposed to tell me, but like the actual local person sitting in a coffee shop that, you know, you just go up to and start a conversation with. So that is my favorite part of traveling. And the people in Southeast Asia are just some of my favorite, the culture, the religion, just the kindness of the people just warms my heart. I just love it so much. And there's something that draws me to it. So that would be my most beautiful place. If I had to put a label on beautiful, you mentioned the Maldives.
Yes.
The Maldives are aesthetically one of the most beautiful places ever. You've seen pictures of it, and the pictures are what it actually looks like. Like they're not artificial. It is actually what the Maldives look like. It's a stunning place. And a place like, like no other.
All right, Steph, I'm going to test you again here. What is your favorite book of all time?
Obviously, it's the Bible, Kevin.
Yes.
Nailed it.
Very good. This time you didn't say the book we wrote called You Met Her Where.
But it's still a really good book.
That is true.
And it would make a great gift for friends or relatives on their birthday or for Christmas.
Friends, you can order your copy of our book titled You Met Her Where at kevinandsteph.com. And we will make sure to personally sign a copy for you or whoever you want.
And as always, thank you for listening to Tell Us a Good Story. You are listening to the Tell Us a Good Story podcast on the AM/FM 24/7 network.
Hey, congratulations. What an accomplishment.
Yes. Thank you.
I mean, a lot of planning. But my gosh, hats off to you, Renee. So impressive.
I'm so impressed with you because I hate to say this. Like, I have a fear of traveling to another country. Like, how will they treat me? I don't know the language. I don't know, like, logistics of how to go. And you just, like...
By yourself.
With your couple of jeans and shirts and, like, let's just do this. I'm blown away by your courage, your resilience. I'm truly blessed to know you.
Even getting to a country like Renee does and the buildings are not accessible with a wheelchair, right? Because she's going to run into that.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
A lot of countries she goes, right? Especially older buildings.
All over. I have been on so many strange men's backs. Piggyback rides up, you know, flights of stairs. I've shared a lot of sweat with strangers. It's really disgusting. I've had women, you know, just when I get to a place and I'm like looking at this flight of stairs, you know, even if it's just three or four steps, like, what am I going to do here? Like out of the woodwork, people just come. And again, language barriers aside, they just somehow know to pick up on the front of the chair and the back. And before you know it, I'm up in there and there's just like no words said. It's so heartwarming and it has refreshed my view of humanity. It's fantastic to be back in the US and know that every restaurant I go to, I can go to the restroom if I need to. But at the same time, there's some cultural pieces I think are different in other parts of the world that I wish we could integrate. You know, I can't have it all.
I think at the end of the day, it's just people are still good. They're still good people.
Yes. I say it all the time when I sit down and talk with most people in the world, all human beings have this basic foundation of what they need. They want to be loved. They want to have a nice home for their family. They want to talk about their kids. They want to have a nice meal. They want to laugh. You know, we all want the same basic things. We just get so wrapped up in all this other fuzz.
Mm-hmm. Right. Next fun fact. A few years ago, Renee started a bucket list. And on that list were two things that she wanted to check off as soon as she could. First, spend a week alone in a foreign country. And then second, do one thing every year that scared her to death. So what are some of the things you've done that you're like, I've got to do it. I've got to experience this.
I mean, in this past year, there's been so many. Getting on the flight to come to Bali by myself was the first time I was really going out into the world by myself, a female alone with a wheelchair. I was prepared for everything. What if somebody comes and takes my wheelchair? I'm a sitting duck then. I can't run away. You know, I'm stuck. I'm trapped. What if somebody attacks me? What if my phone breaks? The list goes on and on. I would say that was my big scary thing for last year. But I think in that whole year, every place I visited, there's always a little bit of underlying fear of what is this place going to be like? How am I going to be treated? How am I going to communicate? How am I going to get out if I need to get out? But when you start getting into some parts of the world, you start to kind of take a step back and there is that underlying fear that constantly is with me. So what next year will hold? I have no idea. I'll come up with something though.
I believe there's 195 countries. Mm-hmm. You've visited 117. Is one of your bucket lists to visit every country in the world at some point? Is that what you would like to do someday?
Yes, absolutely.
Wheelchair or not, has anybody ever done that?
Nobody, to my knowledge, in a wheelchair has ever done it. There are worldwide about 300 people who have done it.
Wow.
So very small percentage of the population. It's difficult when you start thinking of places like North Korea or Syria or Libya. There's some places in the world where legally I can't even get into.
You don't have access to. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's even some that I can get into, but safety-wise is... You know, you're walking a fine line for your life. So, Russia, for example.
Right.
I would love to go to Russia someday. I'm not going to go this year.
Before I get to my last fun fact here, I want to read a quote from Renee's blog. Quote, Everyone wants to come to America. I cannot believe that I am one of the 5% of the entire global population who holds an American passport. I cannot believe that because of this blue covered booklet that says the United States of America on it, I am one of the most privileged and coveted people in the world. So, Renee, when you're overseas in some of these countries, what is their impression of the United States?
So, the statement is accurate. Everyone wants to come to America. Many of them want to come and live there. Many of them want to just come and visit. And when I talk about the privilege of traveling with a U.S. passport, it is very real. I can go to almost every single country in the world, you know, North Korea, Syria aside, with my passport and just show up. Most other countries to get into the U.S., even to visit for a long weekend or, you know, a vacation, they have to go through an extensive process to get a tourist visa, often costing thousands of dollars. You know, and keep in mind, wages in many parts of the world are much different than in the U.S. And many of them get denied. So many of them don't even get to step foot on the U.S. because they legally cannot. So there's that component of it. Their view, most of them, when you sit down and you talk with the average local person in most part of the world, they recognize that the differences that the world has are very political, and that I'm not the one that's necessarily driving hate between the U.S. and Russia, or, you know, whatever two countries are at conflict with each other. So they realize that the Americans coming into their country are generally very good people. And they're very appreciative of us coming because we bring money into their economy. And they desperately need that. Most countries, you know, not all, but most countries desperately need that money, that tourism money, to drive their economy. And it feeds their families. So, you know, in general, yeah, everyone wants to come to America, if not to live, at least to see it. And they all want to come to New York City. They think that, you know, their view of America is New York City. They're not seeing the, you know, the Northwestern Ohio parts of it, but which is a very real part of America. But, you know, they want to go to New York City. And it's a dream that, unfortunately, just because where they were born, they may never get to check off their list.
All right. Final fun fact. I don't know how she's doing this, but Renee is also working towards her doctorate degree in business. So when do you find the time to do that and sleep and plan your next travels and all of that? Like, that's amazing, Renee.
I have a lot of airplane time sitting in airports or, you know, transit airplanes and trains. And I have been sticking true to my plan of being back into my accommodation by dark time. So, for example, I'm here in Indonesia. It gets dark at 6:30 p.m. So if I'm back at 6:30 p.m., I have some time to wind down, you know, read, catch up with family, work on studies, you know, all sorts of things. Obviously, some parts of the world, the sun stays up longer. So, you know, I'm out as long as I can, but I do have that time, depending on where I'm at, where I can really get some focus time in.
Well, listeners, for more information about Renee, you can go to her website, wheelstravelstheworld.com. And that is where I was able to connect with her. I was able to read about her, get a lot of information. And then she also posts a lot of information about her travels. And she'll be putting her post-sabbatical and future plans on that website as well. So, Renee, when do you plan on making a decision then on your future? Because you're traveling until May, I believe, right? So you have 2 more months.
Mm-hmm. I have some things in action now. I'm trying really hard to just like focus on this last little bit of my journey and like just take it all in and not spend too much energy on the future. But it's hard, of course. You know, I have these natural fleeting thoughts, and I start to get excited about what my future can look like. And I've had a year to really sit down and think about what I want to do. So I would say in the next 6 to 8 weeks, I'll have something to put out there and share with the world.
Again, that is wheelstravelstheworld.com. And we'll put that website in our show notes. So listeners, you can just click on it and go right to her website. Well, Renee, as expected, Northwest Ohio girl.
Exceeding our expectations.
Exceeding expectations.
Yes.
But thank you so much for spending time with us 13 hours ahead, right? Mm-hmm. 13 time zones away from us right now. So thank you.
Thank you. You can now go to bed. I'm sure you're tired, but thank you so much.
Thank you guys for having me. And thank you to whoever gave the recommendation on the newspaper. I mean, send them my thanks as well.
Friends, thank you for listening to this episode of Tell Us a Good Story.
For additional content and longer episodes, you can go to our website at kevinandsteph.com or wherever you like to listen to podcasts.
And don't forget, you can catch us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 10 a.m. right here on the AM/FM 24/7 network. Thank you for listening to
Tell Us a Good Story.